You are listening to WRCE 1450 AM, W299 CD, Richland Center.
On our morning show today from WRCO, we're pleased to welcome back an old friend of the morning show, Joy Kirkpatrick, Farm Succession Outreach Specialist from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Madison Division of Extension. Joy, it's been a long time. Good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks. I'm really happy to be here.
You have quite a history with WRCO. I think Ron interviewed you like one of your first days on the job, didn't he?
Yeah, I started my Richland County dairy and livestock agent. They were called agents instead of educators on September 1st, 1993. So it's been 30 years. I was on the job of like maybe 4 days when then the county fair started. So I did a live interview with Ron out at the fairgrounds. First time I'd ever done a radio interview, first time I'd ever done anything live. So, but of course, you know, Ron, he made it easy.
It worked out well, didn't
it? Yeah.
You were really thrown in with the county fair starting too.
It was culture shock, right? Like all of this stuff going on all at once, but yeah.
How long were you on the job here in Richland?
I was in Richland County for 11 years. So in 2004, I moved to the statewide position that I have now. And so, yeah, so I've been, so I was there 11 years. And then since 2004, I've been in the position I'm in now.
Okay. And your job has changed a little bit. Do you do a little bit more remote work than you used
to?
Yeah.
I mean, because the extension model has changed a little bit. And so for the farm management component of it, we have a smaller team, so we're trying to do more remote work, and then as we were changing, you know, the pandemic hit, and I think that people are used to doing a little bit more, and I think they, in some cases, they found that they, if they have good internet, it's easier to sit in on a webinar or watch a recording or something like that rather than having to travel into in person. We still like to do in person things, but we want to make sure that they're in those people who are ready to do that skill development and skill building, and then I also still do one-on-one farm work with farms, especially around farm succession.
Okay. And that's one of the first things we wanted to talk about today was farm succession. You have some things coming up here that you like to maybe put out there if people want to register for those. But certified farm succession coordinator training is coming up as well. You wanted to talk about that?
Yeah. So that one, the certified farm succession coordinator training is the target audience for that one is professionals who are working with farmers and farm businesses around succession planning. So we help them give them some ideas about how to get that conversation started, sort of be that neutral facilitator sometimes that needs to happen. So we do that. We've been doing that training for professionals, I think since 2012. We used to do that in person. Actually, that is more of a national and international program. We used to travel all over the country and offer that. And now we're doing it virtually, of course. And our professionals especially, I think, appreciate not having to travel and do the hotel and that kind of stuff. So we do, usually it's like 3 Tuesdays in a row that we do that training with some homework in between. We're trying to get people, professionals who, you know, could be attorneys. We've had accountants, lenders, people who already work with farmers, but want to help them. What we say is we want to help them have those conversations around succession planning and have an idea of what they want to do. So then when they are ready to do it, they maybe their time's a little more efficient with those professionals. So a lot of times we'll have people who are consultants, you know, farm consultants who want to add that to their services and different things like that. So definitely that one's we've been doing a while. And yeah, that one's we've got one coming up starting in February. So if people are interested in that, we have information about that on our website.
And that's virtual as well, I believe.
Yeah. It starts at 10 o'clock in the morning and goes until 4. And that's like three Tuesdays in a row. And we hit a lot of different things. It's very and people like a lot of times they if they've had an experience with virtual that hasn't been great, I think they hesitate thinking about it. But we make it really interactive, and we do activities, which you know, when you think about virtual, that may be, you think that might be hard, but we make it so that it's very interactive and conversational. And we know that all of these professionals bring real world experiences to the table. So it's not like me and my co-facilitator are doing just lecture. We really want to have some exchange and interaction with those participants.
And I think virtual presentations have improved as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's lots of things that you can do. And some of the things in between the live sessions, we have videos and activities and worksheets and things like that that we ask them to do. So they're really getting a lot of things in between as well.
As you focused on this as a career, why did you feel that succession was important?
Yeah. Well, I, in some ways it was a little bit personal, right? When I was growing up on the farm, there was no conversation about if somebody was going to take over. And so then, when my dad passed away, somewhat suddenly, we kind of had to think about, okay, what's going to happen here? How are we going to, you know, what's my mom going to do? Who might want to take over the farm and that sort of thing? So in a lot of ways, it started out as a personal sort of thing, but I saw a lot of farm families who were having to think about that. And I really felt like that was a place that I could focus because we did have one specialist at UW-Madison for extension. You might remember, I don't know, some people might remember Phil Harris, who was our farm law specialist. So he did a lot of work on those really technical things of taxes and business entities and how you can sort of transfer those assets. But there wasn't anybody talking about the more human side of it, right? The thinking about what are the goals, how do you change the way that you talk to each other from, and especially a lot of the work that I do is still within families, right? I do work with people who maybe have found someone outside of the family to take over the farm, but you know, probably 85% of my work is still with families. And thinking about how do you change your relationship or conversation or from parent child to maybe employer employee for a while. And then hopefully as that relationship builds, it becomes a partnership, right? You can't always take all the ways that you run a family and put that against a business and having a conversation about how do you start transferring management and thinking about one of the topics that has become a really big issue is that inheritance piece of fair, what we call fair versus equal, right? If you have had one of your children on the farm for a lot of years and they've maybe helped you kind of build your farm or helped you just, you know, maintain it. And you have other children who are off the farm, but then you think about inheritance. What's a fair inheritance? When you think about that, what that may be, that on-farm child's maybe sacrificed to be a part of the farm.
It's difficult on both sides. You know, it's difficult for the person, the older person, mm-hmm. you know, maybe not wanting to kind of give up the reins. And then when they do, oh, they're not doing it the way I would do. And I'm sure you've seen and heard it all.
Yeah. So I call them the owner generation and the successor generation. Okay. Because when I would call people older generation, they typically like that. So the owner generation and the successor generation. And, you know, that also helps with the idea of if it's an unrelated person that's coming in. But, you know, there's so much about succession planning that is way more emotional than people are probably wanting to admit, or, you know, so thinking about that, there's been some research in Ireland that's been working about like that identity piece, right? Like, what am I if I'm not a farmer? So thinking about, if I'm not the one making all of those big decisions, then what's my role? And we talk about maybe that role turns into being a mentor for that next generation, right? Thinking about being able to step away and help them build those skills. You know, that's not always going to work within family, because I always compare it to your parents maybe aren't the best people to teach you how to drive, you know, kind of thing. So depending on the relationship, maybe you can be a mentor to some different new farmer that you can, you know, just thinking about what is it that owner generation can do to feel like they're contributing in some sort of way. But for that generation, for that generation, they have just immersed themselves in making sure that that farm is running and doing the best that they can, that a lot of times they haven't had that opportunity to step back and think about, what if I wasn't doing this 24/7, right? So we try to have some ideas and some conversations around that too.
Yeah, I see. And then certainly decisions have to be made, but there's a lot of emotions on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. And when I mean, I don't want to put the blame, if you want to say it that way, on that owner generation all the time. When I talk about parent-child relationships and the way they communicate, a lot of people always think about like, well, then that parent is maybe more directive and telling everybody what to do. But also when you think about it on that successor side, the successor needs to take responsibility and make some decisions. And even if they make a decision that maybe isn't great, take the responsibility of having made that decision. So, you know, both sides of it have to really think about, how are we going to be responsible and respectful to each other?
And you wonder too why it is that maybe it'd be easier to mentor somebody that's not blood related, but I'm thinking sometimes it probably is.
There is a value, a really huge value, I would call it, like a lot of times in other areas or other industries, they call it institutional knowledge, right? You know that farm, that particular farm's idiosyncrasies, quirks, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you know that there's one field that's wet all the time until, you know, a certain date or whatever. There's a low spot, or there's certain things that, so you still want that to be transferred in a way that that next generation understands that. But then also, but with some skill development, like you said, it might be helpful to have a little bit of distance there.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about this coming up. If people are interested, there's some classes they can sign up for.
Yeah, setting aside the Certified Farm Succession Coordinator training, we also have something that's more of an audience for farmers. And that one is called Cultivating Your Farm's Future. And it is virtual as well. This is the second year in a row that we've offered this virtually. So this one is 4 weeks, and we send out, after people register, we send out some hard copy materials. So they've got the worksheets and things that we'll be going through. They have a little bit of homework of maybe watching some videos or doing some of those exercises that we send out in the mail. And then we meet for about an hour and a half for a live conversation and some lecture and things like that. So for 4 weeks in a row, we meet for an hour and a half. So while I know that people, a lot of people like in person more, we also have found that this particular offering being virtual, we've had people be able to attend that wouldn't normally be able to come to a meeting, either because we do some in the evening, and we also have a noontime one that we're offering, because they're working, or one person might come. We have, last year we had farms who registered and they had family in Texas, like they had children in Texas and some other states, or they were just in different parts of the state. So they were all able to join and hear the same thing at the same time. And then we sometimes put them into their own breakout groups so that they could have conversations within the farm unit. So it really actually opened up some opportunities for people to be able, more people who wouldn't normally be able to join to be able to participate.
Joy, you talk about a three-step process. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. So that one, what we talk about is what we really encourage farms to do, businesses, is where are you now, right? That's the first step. So it's where are you now, where do you want to be, and then how do you get there? Where are you now is really thinking about putting together in writing a good description of your farm. I recently have started calling that sort of your elevator speech, because when you go in, when you start working with professionals, and let's say you need to have an attorney, right? Obviously, you're going to need to have an attorney at some point when you start putting together these contracts or your estate plan. They don't know your farm, right? They don't know your farm like you do. So having a good description of how your farm is running, who's a part of it, what sorts of assets are a part of it, and how those assets are owned. And then also thinking about, so being able to tell them that, okay, this is what I have and this is how we're working now. And then the next step of that is, where do we want to be? Having already had some conversations with your farm partners or your family of what is it that we want to have happen? Like when we are at the end of this process, or at the bigger picture end of process, right? What is it that we want to have done, right? Do we want to make sure that the farm is still in the family name? Do we want it to still be a farm business? Are we concerned about like the capacity of being able to take care of that owner generation? So thinking about what are the goals and the vision that everybody has, and making sure that they've had that conversation, so when they go into those professionals, the goals kind of match across the, you know, like the business goal and then the goal is this. Because if you go in and haven't had those conversations, you're spending more time that might be at an hourly rate, to be quite honest. So we're hoping that this class, if we can help you walk through, especially those first two steps of where are you now and making sure you have a framework of how do you put that all in writing, and then have had these guided conversations about where do you want to be, then you're much better position to have a more efficient and probably a better plan when you're able to tell those, like your accountant and an attorney, this is what we want to do. And then they can narrow down your choices or options, rather than teaching you all about a laundry list of things that you could do. They have a better idea of like, well, this particular plan would fit better for you because of this, this, and this.
At what age should you start thinking about that?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the million-dollar question?
Yeah, as soon as possible. You know, there are some people that say, you know, you need to be starting to figure out how you're going to exit as soon as you start something, right? And yeah, that in a perfect world, that would be great if you're thinking about that. And I know how, you know, a beginning farmer or a farmer, you know, farmers who are have young families, that's really hard to do because they're just trying to figure out how to get through each day and thinking about maybe expanding or, you know, making this farm work. In a perfect world, what we'd love to have is people who have kids, maybe who are still under 18. Even if you can have conversations about what their expectations, the owner generation's expectations are for them to be able to come back to the farm. I think that for some farms, they say, well, we'd really like you to have a 2 or 4 year degree or have had some years working for someone else's for some experiences or, you know, something maybe to, I would see like being able to say they know what they're coming back to, right? They've had outside experiences from the farm. So then when they make that decision to come back, they know what those other options out in the world would have been, right? So that it feels like a more of a conscious choice is what we would encourage people to think about. Some farms, I've heard them say, owner generation say, if the children want to come back, they have to come back with a plan of how they're going to either make me money or save me money, right? Thinking about how are they going to work themselves back into that business? Because to be quite honest, with the farms that I work with, and maybe, you know, farms don't have to work with me, so it's kind of a self-selection. But the size of farms and the type of farms that end up coming to work with me and with Extension, they really need to think about financially, is the farm capable of doing what they might be asking it to do, right? Maybe it's doing what it needs to do for one family unit. And to be quite honest, that family unit may have some outside income coming in, right? Somebody may be working off the farm to bring some income in for family living. They may be working off the farm to have health insurance that's more affordable. There's all kinds of reasons, right? But then when you think about bringing a next generation into it, that's another family living, right? At least partial, right? You want to be able to pay that person for their work. So thinking about how does that farm change? Do they add an enterprise? Do they get bigger? Do they, what are the things that could be changed so that that next generation fits in with the labor and the management? And then also where's financial capacity for that farm to, pay that person?
A lot of times you're bringing in the next generation, you're bringing in a spouse, you know, everybody has to be on the same page.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing that is like, and there's this whole concept of, and it doesn't matter if it's a farm, but they talk, there's a lot of research out there about family businesses, right? How do family businesses continue generation after generation? And the research shows that a lot of them don't, right? I think that family farms may have a little bit of a better piece on that because there's so much attachment to that land and that legacy of having a family farm. But on the flip side of that, that's a lot of pressure too, right? But when you think about bringing, like you said, bringing in a spouse and maybe already have that, they already have some kids. So you've got a next generation there. That's where you have to have, I feel like I encourage farms to have like intentional sorts of farm business meetings, right? It's a set time. It's got an agenda. You have some ideas about what you're going to talk about, because when your kids were under 18, let's just, you know, like a typical dairy farm or family farm, the husband and wife are probably managing that farm together, and think about where those conversations happen. Maybe first thing in the morning while they're eating breakfast, maybe when they're brushing their teeth before they go to bed, maybe if they're out doing chores together, they're talking about things like those management decisions. But when you bring another adult and maybe another spouse along with that, where are you going to have those conversations where all four of you are together, or whoever needs to be a part of that? You're going to have to make those more intentional, because maybe that family's not having breakfast with you and they're probably not brushing their teeth with you at night. So how do you have those conversations so that you can talk about what are those big picture things, or what do we, you know, you talk about like, what do we need to have done in the next week? What do we need have done in the next month? But then you also have to think about, what do we want to this farm to look like in 3 years? You have to carve out time and be really intentional about it when you're bringing in new people.
I had some windshield time over the weekend, and it's certainly sad as you drive through the countryside. Saw lots of farms that were probably top of the line 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and sitting empty for whatever reason, you know, the case might be. But I guess the whole goal is to try to keep them going if you can. Right?
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, what is it that's best for that family? And that's the thing about succession planning and probably in general farm business management, right? When you think about comparing that to maybe crops or dairy and livestock and things like that. You can give some, Extension can do research and give lots of recommendations that will be really good for a big chunk of the producers, right? Like this is something new that would work for you, right? And you're thinking about it. Of course, they have to think about if it fits within their farm and their management. But in general, you can talk about weed control in soybeans and all kinds of things that will reach be pertinent to a lot of people. With farm succession, especially in farm business management decisions, it's really unique to that farm, right? Because I grew up, I'm the youngest of seven. That's very different for somebody who only has two children, right? And thinking about how many of those seven children want to come back? Do all of them want to come back? Well, that's a very different conversation when I grew up on an 80-acre farm. Not going to happen, right? When you think about that. It's just really every situation is different. You can have, in general, you can talk about business entities, you can talk about tax implications, but to really make change and help farms move forward with that succession planning, you're going to have some conversations to help them think about what is it that they want to do. And those goals and those visions are very unique to each family.
Do you deal with wills?
I don't deal with wills. We do. Luckily, we have a new outreach specialist who is an attorney. She just started back in August. Her name's Kelly Wilfert, and she's doing some work on getting out some educational materials about business entities and estate planning. So she will probably not do as much individual one-on-one work as I do. She's going to want to make sure that she does educational resources and materials that really reach a lot of people, because she can talk about wills and trusts and different sorts of estate plans and power of attorney and those sorts of things. And that can really cover for a lot of people the education that they need. And then they need to go to their own attorney and make that. So I work with Kelly on some of those things. So we talk about the importance of a will, and we talk about some of the things that you can put into a will, but we're definitely not, you know, going to be doing those for anyone.
I see. Mm-hmm. But probably important to have one, even if the succession program is, you know, the process is in the planning.
Yeah. There are some attorneys that really, they talk about, like, if a family comes in and they haven't updated their will in a while, you know, we hear these stories, and I have worked with farms where I said, well, do you have a will? And then they bring it out and they realize that their youngest child, who is 30, wasn't even named in the will, right? Because mm-hmm. it's that old, right? So when thinking about the last time they did a will was before all their kids had even been born. So a lot of attorneys will say, you know, you need to have sort of those stopgap sorts of risk management. So even if you don't know exactly what you're going to do with your assets as you're moving forward with this plan, what if something were to happen to you right now? Is it going to where you are? Your assets going to who and how you want them to be moved? So that would be something like making sure that you have some of those sort of stopgap things in place. Power of attorney for healthcare, power of attorney for finances, right? So those pieces are both of the power of attorney pieces are, if you're not able to make decisions for yourself, you're still alive, but you can't make decisions for yourself, or you can't run the business, who's going to do that for you? So those are some things that the attorneys really like to see. Those, even if it's, you know, and it's not like those are going to be set in stone for years and years, right? But it is something that has some protection to risk while you're still putting together that longer term plan.
A lot of laws and things have changed in the last few years, haven't they?
Yeah, the you know, the taxes, people always are worried about inheritance tax or death tax or things like that. And there have been some changes to increase those limits. So thinking about those kinds of things have changed. I don't want to get into the weeds of those because those get complicated, but those have increased, right? So I will say, in general, the way the tax estate tax laws are right at this moment, and for Wisconsin state tax laws as well, For the farms, most of the farms that I work with, they rarely get to that threshold of having to worry about paying for their estate, having to pay taxes. Because at this moment, it's like somewhere between 12 and 13 million per person that can be passed on through their estate. So our farms are getting bigger, but a lot of the farms I work with aren't that big, right? Mm-hmm. So thinking about that. So once we can sort of get that information out and let people know, it's like, but you still need to think about what you want to have happen and where it goes. Now, some of those rules in the law that was signed to give us those increased limits, there's a sunset in that. So people are looking at like 2025 into 2025. Some of those rules are going to go back to lower limits. We don't know what Congress will do. Maybe they'll change the law so that those limits are a little more permanent. You know, those higher limits are more permanent. But just knowing that like those are at this point at a range that are pretty generous when you think about that.
Joy Kirkpatrick is our guest on WRCO, talking about farm succession and related stories around the farm. And we'll have more coming up after a news update.
Terminal off Highway 14 behind Center Lodge.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
News time today, sponsored by Bailey Paint and Decorating, your full-line Benjamin Moore dealer with quality paint and expert advice. And by Chet's Feed, Seed and Such, the friendly feed store. Today's forecast calls for a high of 13 with partly sunny conditions, a low of minus 2 tonight. Right now in Richland Center, after an early reading of 1 above, we were at 7 below 0 for a time, and now back to minus 6. There are no delays or cancellations today of area schools.
Bailey Paint and Decorating reminds you the perfect color should be enjoyed for years to come. Extraordinarily durable Benjamin Moore paint and exterior stain ensure just that. Bailey Paint and Benjamin Moore know getting the right product is the secret to success. Bailey Paint and Decorating ensures you'll have the right color and products and offers the best paint you can buy in Benjamin Moore paint products. Bailey Paint and Decorating, Court Street, downtown Richland Center, your Benjamin Moore headquarters.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Mee. Here's what you need to know. Marshfield Clinic Health System will be laying off around 3% of its workforce in 2024, according to an email by the health provider sent personnel. The layoffs are being made to help the organization achieve financial turnaround goals. The majority of the layoffs are in the non-patient seeing departments, including leadership positions. The organization stated that the decision was made after a comprehensive review of its service and labor resources. This decision comes only a matter of weeks after high-level leaders within the Marshfield Clinic system received pay cuts in 2024 to help stabilize the healthcare provider's finances and end merger talks between Marshfield Clinic System and Duluth, Minnesota-based Essentia Health. Republicans who control the Wisconsin State Senate have voted to fire a utility regulator because he supports income-based rates. The Senate voted 21-11 Tuesday to reject confirmation for Public Service Commissioner Tyler Huebner. Democratic Governor Tony Evers appointed Huebner to the commission in March of 2020 and reappointed him in March of 2021. Before joining the commission, Huebner served as executive director of Renew Wisconsin, a nonprofit organization that advocates for renewable energy. Republican Senator Julian Bradley said before the vote that the PSC has no legal authority to create different rates based on a customer's ability to pay. The Richland County Board met last night to conduct business of the county. The board approved two job descriptions, the parks and trails maintenance position to ensure proper year-round mowing, plowing, repair, and upkeep of county fairgrounds, trails, and parks properties. The Board of Supervisors approved the creation of a parks and trails maintenance worker in the Richland County Highway Department. Also approved was the creation of a position in the Richland County Management Information System for a MIS assistant at 20 hours a week.
A $24,600 payment to General Communications Incorporated of Madison was approved for a 2024 maintenance contract for the Sheriff's Office radio system. The board also approved the purchase of a used ambulance from the Muscadet Rescue Squad to replace the Richland County Joint Ambulance Committee's oldest ambulance at last night's meeting. Emergency fire wardens in Richland County were approved. They are the Boaz Country Store, the Natural Bridge Store, Richland County Land Conservation, and the Port were all approved. Joanne Welsh was honored last night for her 39 years of service to the county in the Health and Human Services Department upon her retirement. It was also announced that a public meeting will be held February 6th at 5 o'clock to discuss the Highway 60 road project between U.S. Highway 61 and County Highway W, located in Richland and Crawford counties. The meeting will be held at the Richwood Town Hall. As Richland County looks at the future of the UW-Richland campus, legislators are discussing a bill to assist counties losing their campuses. State Senator Howard Markline was a guest on this week's morning show.
Campus community transition grants, which affects us right here in Richland County. And this is something that Tony Kurtz and I authored. And it would be a grant program to counties in which a two-year campus has closed, okay? And Richland County is slated to get $2 million in that bill, as are a couple of other counties, Washington County and Fond du Lac County, with their two-year campuses closing in-person instruction. So we are, Tony Kurtz and I are working and trying to get that thing done. Again, I met with the Richland County Administrator, and, there's a lot of possibilities here, for what to do with the campus. All of them are going to take some money, So if the state can help out counties like Richland County, I think that's a great thing. And as far as precedent, when the Medford two-year campus was closed many years ago, the state stepped in and helped the county there with their closure. So we had a hearing in the assembly on that bill last week, and I'm hopeful we get that through.
It could be a while before counties see any money from the legislation if passed.
It has to get out of committee, and it's got to go through Joint Finance Committee, and then it's got to get passed by both houses and then signed by the governor. So, I don't know what the prospects are. I think there are a number of legislators that may not have been interested in that conversation, but now with the UW kind of, I think, hinting at the prospect of more two-year campuses maybe getting closed, I think there's legislators that are kind of looking in their backyard saying, this might be a good bill because maybe my county will end up having to take over the maintenance of these buildings.
The assembly hearing was held last week. Representative Todd Novak.
Hopefully we'll get it moved and get it out of the assembly and Howard can take care of it in the Senate and go there.
In the meantime, Richland County has developed a campus reconfiguration committee to focus on the future of the campus. The Richland Center Fire Department responded to a house fire on Cocomanjo Road on Tuesday afternoon around 12:45. Six fire units and 24 firefighters arrived to find the fire in the ceiling of the first floor around the chimney area. Fire personnel were able to keep the fire contained to a small area around the chimney area in the floor of the second level and a wall upstairs. Water damage was minimal, but there was heavy smoke damage to the second level of the home. No injuries were reported. Fire personnel were on the scene for 2 hours and assisted by the Richland County Sheriff's Department and the Viola Fire and EMS. A change of quarters was covered by the Muscadet and Avoca Fire Departments to backfill the Richland Center station. And potential sites for a Madison Amtrak station are being narrowed down. The city of Madison is deciding whether the 3,200 square foot station should be in its downtown area near the Madison Public Market or at the site of the old Oscar Mayer factory. A study on where to place the station recommended that it not be put on UW-Madison's campus near the airport or on the city's east side. The studies add that necessities for the site would include equitable access, ridership potential, rail operations, land use and development, and multi-modal connectivity. The station is projected to be built and operational between 2028 and 2031.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home. Want to improve your sleep quality? Maybe a mattress with a built-in cooling cover is just what you need from American Bedding that is made right here in Wisconsin. Stop down to our newly remodeled showroom and see why we have quickly become Spring Green's largest mattress dealer. With over a dozen mattresses on display, our expert staff will assist you in finding the perfect mattress to give you a quality night's sleep. Located on Highway 14 next to the Ring Brothers.
The forecast for today calls for a high of 13. It will be partly sunny and not as cold, a west wind around 10. For tonight, mostly cloudy and cold, a low of 2 degrees below zero. Thursday, 14 for a high. Friday, 10. Saturday, 13. Looks like a warm-up trend by Sunday, 21 and 34 Monday, but now they're mentioning kind of maybe a light winter mix on Monday, mixed with some light rain on Tuesday at times. Right now, WRCO Studios, no delays or cancellations today, and after an early reading today of 1 above, that followed yesterday's high of 5 above, our temperature is 7 degrees below zero.
Hello friends, it's Ellie from Chet's. We are excited to be a supplier for next level super premium dog food. We have a variety of dog food fit for every dog's nutritional needs. Stop down today and let us share with you the benefits of next level dog food. And as always, you're looking good today.
Sports Time is sponsored by the Richland Hospital, specializing in rural health care since 1924, making a difference by caring, educating, and healing. And by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Coming up, a look back at last night's high school events, and the Badgers suffer a tough loss on the road.
Binge drinking or drinking five or more drinks on an occasion is a risky behavior that carries high costs for individuals and communities. Binge drinking can lead to liver failure, alcohol poisoning, injury, violence, and death. If you are trying to quit binge drinking, telling your support systems about your plan to quit can help begin your journey towards a healthier life. If you would like to be connected to resources, contact the Richland Hospital and Clinics.
In boys basketball, Wisconsin Heights held on for a 57-53 win over Richland Center last night. The Hornets won earlier this season at the Vanguard's home gym. Last night, Heights led by 18 points in the first half at 29-11. By halftime, the Hornets only trailed 32-23. Richland Center continued to play from behind in the second half, finally took the lead at 51-50 on a three-pointer by Jaden Shep with 2:43 left. The Vanguard's John Vosburgh made two free throws, and Heights led 52-51 with 37 seconds. The Hornets' Brady Dosh hit a basket with 20 seconds left, and the Hornets led 53-52. Wisconsin Heights then worked the ball for a final shot, and after a miss, a foul was called, which put them at the line with 2.9 seconds remaining. After a made free throw, there was confusion after the Hornets took a timeout that apparently they did not have, and a technical foul was issued. The Vanguards finished the game with free throws and hung on for a 57-53 win. They were led by John Vosburgh with 19, Reed Adler 14, Ethan Myers totaled 10. Richland Center was led by Trayton Shep, who made four threes on the way to 14 points. Liam Fingerson added 11, Wes Bosworth 9. Richland Center won the JV game 48-23. The Hornets will return to Southwest Conference play at Lancaster Friday. Wisconsin Heights, now 7-6, will host Cambridge on Thursday. Elsewhere, the Bulldogs of Ithaca with a rare win in Waseca last night. They led 31-28 at halftime, and they went on for a 73-53 victory. Channing Brown had 24, Sammy Clary 18, Devin Iam 11, and Micah Salisbury 9 for the Bulldogs. Elsewhere in Ridge and Valley Conference play, it was Seneca over Lafarge 66-56, and Kickapoo defeated Weston 76-68. North Crawford over DeSoto 68-43. Darlington was a winner against Riverdale, 80-58. The Redbirds were led by Will Murray's 26, Andre Tainer at 16, Bevan Dennis 15, and Carson Kenyon 14 for Riverdale. Wisconsin Dells over River Valley, 70-61. Elsewhere, Cuba City 66, Boscobel 62, Southwestern 51-43 over Fenimore, Lancaster 79-33 over Belmont. It was Decorah 79-46 winners against Prairie du Chien. Potosi 58, Highland 45. Mineral Point 79-31 over Iowa Grant. Hillsboro 65, Nisita 34. Luther 59, Viroqua 56 in boys area basketball. On the girls' side, a win for DeSoto over Ithaca 52-47 in a makeup game. It was Darlington 54, River Valley 29. Prairie du Chien beat Decorah 58-53. A win for Sauk Prairie over Dodgeville 59-56. Highland 40, Barneville 36. Seneca and Viroqua battled last night with Viroqua winning 52-44. Cashton 48, Hillsboro 44. Royal edged Wonewoc Center 51-50. Luther over Westby 74-42. Elsewhere in sports on the state of Wisconsin scene, a difficult loss for the Wisconsin Badgers last night. Wisconsin had the chance to get the win and keep going in the Big Ten, remain the only undefeated team, but not the case last night as they fell in the game and lost, led by Kanye Clary, 27 points. Ace Baldwin Jr. added 20, and Penn State beat number 11 Wisconsin 87-83 for its first win over an AP top 25 team under coach Mike Rhodes. A.J. Storr scored 23, and Stephen Kroll added 17 for the Badgers, who had their six-game win streak snapped after a sloppy start to the game. Here is coach Greg Gard.
You know, in those situations where there was one in dribble penetration or in ball screen situations, not getting the ball stopped, you know, they played them.
Joy Kirkpatrick is our guest, Farm Succession Outreach Specialist, with some good information for you today. And as we welcome you back to the morning show, some good news. Isn't it funny how life kind of goes in full circle? You're going to be back in Richland Center again, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm going to have an office space at the campus where the extension office is. So that'll be good. And, you know, like we said, we just talked about it at the beginning, I started in Richland County, and now I'm going to have an office space there. I'm not going to be there every day, but I will be there few days a month, just to have a space if I need to have a meeting or those sorts of things. So I'll be set up there.
You'll think it's 1993 all over again, won't you?
Right?
But people need to make an appointment, obviously.
Yeah,
to see
yeah. It. It's not going to be like it used to be where people could walk in, because I won't be there all the time. I don't want to disappoint people and them take the effort to get to the campus and then I'm not there, but they can give me a call. My office phone number is actually still a Madison phone number, but I have it, you know, how technology is now. I can answer that from anywhere. So I can give my office phone number if people want to make appointments. And it'll be nice.
We want to talk about another one of the upcoming classes called Navigating Your Ag Business from Stress to Success. What can you tell us about that, Joy?
Yeah, so this is a new program that we're doing this year. Again, it's virtual, but it is a mix of some online, what we call modules. So there's some things that people go self-paced. And then we have live meetings over Zoom, so that the group, like the students or the participants can meet together and meet each other, meet us, the educators and the facilitators. So again, this is something, this program is funded by what's called a USDA Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Network grant. So there's a lot of funding out there for farm stress, and this is some of the work that we've been doing. And it is interesting. it kind of has that same framework that I talked about with farm succession, is where are you now? Where do you want to be? And how do you get there? But this class kind of is open a bit more than just farm succession, right? It's basically, we're like, what's stressing you out? And what kind of planning can we help you with to sort of address that stress? So it could be, you know, if you're thinking about a new enterprise, if you're trying to figure out how to become more profitable with the enterprise that you've got, it could be farm succession. It could be lots of different things. That it's whatever you as a farm unit decide you want to focus on for the next few months to try to make decisions or take action on to reduce your stress.
Somebody to talk to. We talk a lot about farmer stress. It's a real deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And so this is one way to kind of put some motivation and action to something that, you know, something that's maybe kind of spinning around in your head. And we just want to take that and make that as productive as we can, right? So that we can maybe take that one stressor off your plate.
Farmers are real gamblers, aren't they?
They kind of are.
Kind of have to be.
Yeah, kind of have to be. That's the thing. And I think that they're planners as well. But we're just trying to help them put that plan a little bit more on paper. And the other piece that this navigating your ag business can help with is a lot of people put a lot of good plans together, and then they sort of get kind of, they get busy, they kind of set them aside because certain things come up, you know, like there's always things that come up on the farm. Like we talked about before the show, it's like just this cold weather makes everything harder. But part of this class is the opportunity to have some of us as facilitators, me and some of my colleagues, just to check in with you every once in a while and say, so your plan was you were going to make this decision or take this action. Have you done that? So we're kind of calling it that accountability piece, that somebody from outside the farm can email or give you a call and say, just, you know, you said you were going to do this in 60 days. So where are you with that? Or have things changed that you need to change your plan a little bit? So it's just that little gentle nudge of kind of keeping on track.
Everybody has their own unique stressor, I'm sure.
We actually, part of this particular workshop series is that we ask people to fill out a online survey. They and I are the only people that see their answers. So, but it has a lot of different sections about, you know, is labor management your stressor? Is financial component your stressor? Is it farm succession? You know, what is it? You know, like physically, are there risks on the farm that you need to address? Like farm safety or things like that. So we actually ask them to really think about what is it that's stressing them out the most. And then we take that information along with some other activities. So it gives them a really good idea of like, oh, this is the thing that's really going to make a difference if we can address this. So it's just a more intentional way to kind of really focus on something.
The course following a 3-step process. Could you talk about?
Yeah, it's that same, where are you now? Where do you want to be? And how do you get there? So we do a lot of the same sorts of things. This one in particular, we're going to focus quite a bit more on financial analysis of the farm business. So, pretty much the whole month of February, we're going to have virtual Zoom meetings where we can talk about what is it that you need to gather to do this analysis? How do you put it together? We provide some tools and some spreadsheets to help them with that. And also we have, we've partnered with the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protections Farm Center. They have staff that help with that financial analysis. So any farm that wants to kind of really dig into that, they get assigned someone from the Farm Center to help them with that.
Money habitudes?
Yeah, that one.
I had to look twice at that. Habitudes.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. That's an online assessment. So we give them a code and they go to Money Habitudes online, and then they answer a lot of questions. And it's kind of like a personality assessment around money. So it's like, how do you feel about money? Are you a planner? Are you a saver? Are you someone who likes to enjoy spending money. You know, all there's all kinds of different nuances to sort of a money personality. And for so many people, that financial component is a stressor, whether you're farming or, you know, just in general, that's a stressor. And so if you have a partner or farming partners, you know, there sometimes can be conflicts around that. So understanding each other's and everybody's personalities around or preferences around how they think about money can really help start that conversation a little bit more. And it's kind of a fun little online thing. And then we send the report out to people so that they can have that as a PDF and they can take a look at that and have conversations with everybody in the farm about it.
Whether you're a farmer or ag-related business or whatever, it would fit a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. It's the registrations that we've had so far, we still are. So while the first modules have already opened, so people are doing some of their homework, if people are interested in that navigating your ag business, they can still register and they would still have time to do that, that first module before our February 2nd class. And we have, when we look at the registrations, we have the gamut, right? We have people who are raising cut flowers, or we have some cranberry growers, we have some beef producers, we have crop producers. We have, I don't know if they'll actually show up, but we have a farmer from Nairobi who registered, and from Cairo, Egypt. And they do white beans, tomatoes, dairy. So thinking about the years that they've been farming, that's another question we asked when they registered. It's from 1 year to 40 years. So it's going to be a really interesting mix of people. And I think they can learn from each other.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that being a worldwide thing. I guess I was just thinking about Wisconsin.
Yeah, when it's online, people find us. And I did the math, or I actually looked online. Our live sessions are noon to 1:30 on Fridays, and it'll be about like 8 o'clock in the evening, 7 to 8 o'clock in the evening in some of those other countries. So
yeah, the time difference there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not quite past their bedtime.
No,
yet,
I hope not. Yeah.
So the deadline is coming up for that. I mean, you can
register. They can register for that. And they can register for Cultivating Your Farm's Future, which is the Farm Succession Workshop. We'd love to have those registrations by this Friday. And because we have materials that we need to mail out so that people have the hard copies. And then the one for the ag professionals, I think that registration's January 26th for that deadline. Because our next one starts in February.
How can people look up more about that, Joy?
Probably the best way would be to Google University of Wisconsin Extension Farm Management. And then when they get to our farm management page, there's something called programs up at the top. And if they click on that programs, there's a drop-down menu and all of the programs that we've talked about, in addition to some others, are listed there. And then you can click on those.
Okay, very well. Very pertinent information. What is the average age of a farmer? Has that changed any in the last few years?
It is, for Wisconsin, I think it's around 50s. It keeps creeping up. When you look at the national average, that's a little bit older than Wisconsin. And I don't know exactly, like I haven't delved into the data to see why, but I kind of assume that states that have a heavier livestock presence maybe are slightly younger. People who have the states that have more of a cropping presence, you can crop, you know, with the technology that's out there, you can crop a lot older, right? Those tractors do a lot of it for you these days. So I think that might be the comparison, but I think it's around 57, 58.
Okay. Yeah. In fact, I thought it was maybe a little bit older than that.
Yeah.
So.
Don't quote me on that. I haven't looked that statistic up in a while.
Putting you on the spot a little bit. But certainly again, never too late to start looking ahead. Never too early too.
We always encourage people to think about, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I know that it's really easy for people, for farms really want to like reinvest all their profits back into the farm. but we really encourage people to think about as you want to leave the farm, right? I'm not going to say retire because that's a dirty word for farmers, but when you're wanting to step back a little bit, if all of your assets are tied up into those farming assets, it's really hard to pull those out when you need them to be more available. So we're always encouraging people to think about planning for your later years by maybe doing some sort of investments that are outside the farm.
And it pays a check on those. Again, if you would have to go to some sort of a facility or whatnot, you want to kind of protect those assets.
Yeah. If you have liquid assets that aren't attached to the farm, that might be what you can lean on to pay for some of that. I mean, nursing home care is so expensive that it's really hard to plan for that in any sort of really airtight way, right? You have to have some flexibility. You have to know that, you know, hope that you're not in for very long, but, you know, thinking about those, right? I think the average stay is like 3 years. And just thinking about how would you pay for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a concern for a lot of folks, and you know, a lot of sad stories. You know, you work hard all your life, you think you have something, and you know, you really don't.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. We have, somebody just checked in to say that they recently read the average age was 64. I don't know if that's nationwide.
I don't know.
It might be.
Yeah. Maybe.
So,
like I said, I hadn't looked at those statistics in a while. So.
Sure. Anything else you'd like to add today, Joy?
The one thing I will do is I want to give out my phone number because sometimes it's easier, like if somebody wants to call me and then I can send them resources or send them links to these programs that I talked about. So I'm willing, you know, leave a message because I'm not always by the phone. It's 608-263-3485.
And be looking for you. You'll be doing some meet and greets in Richland Center sometime.
We'll probably be doing some in-person things. Yep.
Good. Look forward to that. It's been too long. Come back and see us again.
Great. I will.
Yeah. Joy Kirkpatrick joining us, Farm Succession Outreach Specialist, University of Wisconsin, Madison Division. If you have any questions, again, you can contact you or Google some of these things coming up. Sounds good. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
You are listening to WRCE 1450 AM, W299 CD, Richland Center. Below zero.